Radio Kuru, 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Our purpose is to enhance public awareness of our featured nonprofit or advocacy organization in Grant County and surrounding area. I'm Candace Burke, your weekly host. Joining me today are Dr. Jennifer Johnston, professor of psychology at WMNU, and Antonio Canari, student of psychology. Together, they are here to talk about living a carbon neutral life, small as all is the quote, as well as talking about the Youth Enviro Messaging Summit, which is going to be happening on May 1st, starting at 10 a.m. Welcome to Community Spotlight.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
So anyway, I had the joy of being acquainted with Antonio just last week working over at the Commons, and it's so nice to meet you today, Jennifer.
You too,
so
Candace.
I would like to begin this interview by getting a little bit of a background on who you are, how you arrived at this space where you're getting the message out about climate change. So let's start with you, Jennifer.
Okay. So I am a New Mexico native, and I was born in Albuquerque and lived some of my childhood in Colorado, but a lot of it in New Mexico. I went to college at Santa Clara University near his stomping grounds, and but couldn't wait really to get back to New Mexico. And when I had the opportunity to consider, I was really interested in natural home building. I was really concerned about environmental issues. This would have been in the very early 90s. And I learned that our county was a good place to practice that kind of building, and that you could get not only support from people who were already doing it, learn from them, which I went to a workshop in Kingston that the Wilderness Lodge there, one of the guys that was living there at the time, he was building natural homes all over the property in different styles, rammed earth and straw bale and all kinds of things. And so I was really inspired, and I decided that when I graduated with my master's in counseling that the first place I would look for a job was here, and that I would try to build my own home and live off the land. So I did that.
That's a really great story, you know, because I think one thing I love when I'm, you know, interviewing folks here is to hear what their lifestyle is like. What are their carbon neutral lifestyles? So you really are walking that talk of yours.
For a period of time, yes. And it was probably about 3 years. It takes a long time to build your own home, as some of you may know who are listening. And it was a family effort. And I planned to maybe try to grow raspberries as a cash crop, knowing absolute classic sort of suburbanite turned hippie. This is me, where you think you can do all of these things and you can read about it in a book and be able to do it. And I did have some role models and people in the Valley at the time. This was in the Members Valley, who were doing these things. And I was learning, but it was very difficult. And meanwhile, I was still working full time as a counselor in town because I had to pay my bills. And I was trying to figure out if I could transition away from that with this supposed cash crop, right? But alone and as a single woman, it was proving very difficult and really lonely. And that's something I learned a lot about, like rural life and maybe earlier times and kind of how isolated you can get. And so in the end, I ended up moving back into town with a friend, and we kind of started sorting out, and then eventually met my husband, and you know, met him here, and we sorted out how could we live in town and yet still not have too much of a carbon footprint. And so I've been navigating that for the rest of my life, and the land is still there, and I have, you know, a well and solar powered and a very simple living house and such, an outhouse, but I'm still a human person in a human world who wants to be around other people and engaged in neat projects. And I just wasn't getting that living that close to the land and that carbon neutral. So I've been figuring that out of ways to make a difference and to not make too big of a footprint, but still be in a town.
Now, whatever happened to the raspberries?
The raspberry, yeah, that's a whole other story in and of itself.
Okay.
But there was a time I didn't have my well in yet. There was a delay with the well, so I was hand carrying like 60-pound gallon, you know, 7 to 10 gallons at a time of water to water them after I'd planted them, and then every day after work, and there was a friend who would let us use water, and so finally the raspberries died after about a year.
Oh, I'm so sorry. A berry. There's a berry disease.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry
Thank
to hear
you.
About that.
I think it was more me and being foolish about what I really could accomplish there than anything else. But
Well, Antonio, let us hear your story briefly, because we had a chance to chat a little bit last week.
Yeah. Well, so I come from California, a small little town called Martinez, about 30 minutes from any of the big cities such as San Francisco or Oakland. And I had to decide where I wanted to go to college, you know. I was looking all over the country. Originally, I wanted to go to Florida. My grandpa recommended Tennessee because that's where he lived. But Florida was crazy expensive, Tennessee as well. So I looked at New Mexico because New Mexico is the cheapest state pretty much in the country, New Mexico and Mississippi. So I really fell in love with the school. I came to visit. The town was beautiful. I mean, even in winter when everything's, you know, gray, it was still a wonderful town. So I decided to come here. I get here. I'm talking to the advisors, and I wanted to do a marketing degree. Marketing degree and then minor in psychology. But the advisor was like, yeah, you could get your marketing degree in 2 years. And I was like, what? If I can get one degree in 2 years, why don't I get two in 4 years? So now I'm doing a double major in marketing and psychology. In terms of carbon impact, it's really difficult as a college student. The easiest way for you to be carbon neutral is, you know, growing your own things, building your own house, doing your own things. But as a college student, where I'm forced to live on the dorms, I have no land or any space to grow anything, it's been really tough. But I've been trying my best. You know, I have grow lights in my dorm. I'm growing a big, beautiful plant. Hopefully they'll provide me food, but not enough to sustain myself. And then I've been participating in the horticulture club on campus. They do wonderful things. They're currently working on a sustainability project. I'm not sure if you've heard of it in town, the Sustainability and Development Project. So the horticulture club is going to have a huge impact on that. They want to be able to grow their own things and educate students on plant growth and, you know, sustainability. So just coming here from a place where I'm in the suburbs, I don't really, I'm not really focused on that. I'm focused on, you know, going to school to a place where carbon neutrality is really heavily on the mind. It's just a really interesting experience. You know, I've never seen anything like this before. So it's really cool what Silver City does in that aspect.
Yeah, appreciate you sharing this. Now let's talk more about these wonderful talking points leading up to the discussion on the summit coming up. So let's just begin with, again, what were the original terms for what we call as global warming or climate change? That was you have a little bit of a history on this.
Yeah, I'm going to say a little more about the summit and its purpose, and then will you go into some of that background and what you've learned about it. So I teach psychology, so you might think, well, that's funny, or what does that have to do with climate change? You know, and I tend to say global warming because I don't like that someone else put the word climate change in my mouth, which Antonio will mention. But so global warming and environmental issues, obviously, since I was very young, are very important to me. In fact, it's probably my number one most important concern in the world today, and has been all for 30 years. But I do also care about people a lot. I love people, and I've always wanted to help people. And so my first career as a mental health counselor was really focused on that. And when I shifted into teaching more about mental health and teaching about psychology, I've always wondered if there's a way for me to combine my concerns about the environment as well. And because I can sometimes teach an elective, this class opportunity came up. And so it's actually a developmental psychology class about youth and adolescent development. And then I worked in, so it's called Youth Media and Climate Change, because ultimately when I got my doctorate, I became a media psychologist. So I'm a researcher who studies the interplay between the media and all kinds of media, social media, mass media, with our psychology, and particularly with youth psychology. So this class melds the three in a wonderful way that I'm really excited about. And I decided toward the beginning, if it was possible and I had a dedicated group of students, maybe we could do something with the youth in this town, and that they could talk to them and interact with them about messaging around the environment. And so that's exactly what we're doing. And they have helped me put it together. And so we have a large summit that is planned for next week, May 1st. I'll plug the date again.
Yeah, that's coming right up.
It's coming right up. It's next week. And anyone in the community is welcome to come, even though the focus is more on what kinds of messages youth receive about climate and how that affects them and what they want to do with that. But anyone is welcome to come. We will be in Miller Library at 10 a.m. until noon. There will be refreshments, and we have a nice panel of speakers for the first hour, and also three of my students did a qualitative analysis that they're going to present their research on at the beginning of the summit.
Are you one of them, Antonio?
I'm not. I'm on the social media.
On the social media.
Yeah. So these three women will talk about interviews that the students did with local teachers. So the beginning part of the class, we wanted to learn, well, what are youth learning anyway? What is the curriculum like in New Mexico regarding climate change? So nine different teachers were interviewed, and then they compiled those results, and we'll be presenting them at the summit. Then we have a panel of four educators from different backgrounds. Two are professors at Western. One is a geology, earth geology and environmental science professor. The other one is actually a communications professor, so he'll be talking more about the messaging side of things. And then we have an expert in social psychology and the connection between violence and climate change, which I don't even totally understand yet. I'm looking forward to him.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's Dr. Miles. So we have Dr. Klein, Dr. Whitey, Dr. Miles Novello, who's a colleague from the California University that I went to. And then we have two local high school educators who will be presenting as well, Ms. Cornwell and Ms. Gibson, one from Silver High School and one from Aldo Leopold. So that's the panel. And then the second part, and I'll finish up there and let Antonio take over, is a workshop, basically more hands-on, where we will break out the students in the room or the community members in the room into smaller groups so they can talk about this and we can listen to what their thoughts are, what they want to know more about, what they're concerned about, or what they are doing, what actions they're taking that are working. So it's a two-part piece. You can come to the first part or the second part or both, and that's what we're doing next week.
I think this is you're going to have a great turnout.
Thanks.
It sounds wonderful.
Thanks.
Okay, Antonio, let's hear more about these talking points that I'm looking at in front of me here.
Of course. Well, to start off, the reason I took the class is because I'm a marketing student, so I wanted to know more about what goes into words and the psychology behind them. So being a media psychology class, any media we consume directly affects us in some way or another. So that's mainly why I took the class. And there's a theory there called the media equation, where media equals real life. Anything you see in the media, whether it's, you know, like a Batman movie, you're going to think about it in some way being real. You know, as a child, I would watch Batman, and for some reason, I would think I was Batman. And
who says you're not?
Who says I'm not? I don't know my.
At least part of our brain, yeah, I'll add on that just a little, the media equation, has found that the more mammalian and reptilian parts of our brain cannot really distinguish between media and between someone in front of us telling us something. And so it reacts quicker. It's the faster reaction than our cortical mind, our frontal cortex, which can actually weigh and figure out what is real and what isn't real. So all of the time when you're consuming media, you are still, in a way, experience it as though it's very real and that it's right in front of you. Then, yes, later your brain can kind of tell yourself that you're not, but there's always that reaction.
Yeah, and marketers will use this to their advantage. They know that we think certain things are real, and they will use those things wherever they can. And this directly plays into the climate crisis. So a little history here real quick. Roger Revelle was really the one to discover climate change. He was an oceanographer, and about 1958, he started measuring it, and he concluded global warming. We'll get into that in a bit. But he concluded that global warming is real. So all these oil companies did their own independent research, and they found exactly the same thing, that global warming is real and they cause it. So what they started to do was hire marketers to market the climate crisis as something as it wasn't. They used a lot of words such as opinion-based or what was another word they used?
Like there's no consensus.
Lack of consensus.
We're talking like 98% in consensus, 2% not, but they would constantly use that word to sow doubt.
Yeah, and they would put those in official government documents, in all sorts of climate agreements, all sorts of things where we want scientific evidence, not scientific, I paid you off.
And a lot of newspaper articles, they were constantly writing. Two PhDs in particular were hired to write newspaper they were really advertorials, some of them paid for, and some editorials, but very effective, very influential.
Yeah, so all these people are paid to do it, and they're instilling doubt. There's another media psychology theory called cultivation theory, and what that is it kind of reinforces what you already believe. So if you believe that this guy is red, every article you see saying this guy is red will just make you believe it more, and you'll ignore everything else. So a lot of that happened, and a lot of people began doubting it. I had a teacher who was a chemist, or a chemicist, is that how you say it? Chemist, that's what it is.
Yeah.
He was a chemist, and he grew up in that time. He didn't believe it to begin with. He was like, climate change, unbelievable, right?
Mm-hmm.
How can things be getting warmer?
A lot of climate deniers out there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, but he did his own independent research. Yeah. He looked at all the studies, and he concluded that the world was getting warmer. So, I mean, it's easy for him to do because he's a scientist, but the media knew that us
average citizens,
citizens can't have the resources or the understanding to know that the climate was getting worse. Really terrible thing.
Yeah, it really is when you really ponder it, isn't it? And it still perpetuates because, again, there are so many people denying anything going on with the climate.
And I think some of what we want to point out, and especially for youth, is you were duped. It's not, you know, we're not talking so much like that the public is stupid or that they're just, you know, difficult to deny. There was an active, effective campaign that was largely unknown and, you know, very recently unearthed. What we watched were documentaries from just 2 years ago that Frontline got access to researchers at the University of Texas at Austin because ExxonMobil just happened to decide to give all of their old documentation to an archive there and save it in the library. Well, someone took the time, and a journalist and also a couple scientists, to go through memo by memo by memo and saw the active campaign. And they used the three Ds. And they specifically attempted denial, doubt, and later, when that didn't work, delay, which is the phase we're in now. And so then they were able to amass a number of these folks that wrote memos, contact them, and see if they wanted to speak publicly for the first time, and they did. And so we highly recommend that documentary if people want to check it out.
That's a really good suggestion.
Yeah.
And what can you tell? How can the youth change all this? What can you say to the young folks who are coming to this summit? What can they do to make I love that, small is all, to have a carbon neutral life. What can you say? What's the solution here?
Well, actually, Al Gore gave a talk on this of what we can do. He gave a TED talk, and at the time when he gave it, it was strictly a professional thing. It wasn't as open as it is now. So it was recorded for a private group of people specializing in technology, entertainment, and design. So it's a little, you know, it's a little geared towards that, but it still applies. One thing he said is just reduce emissions from your home energy usage, from your car and transportation, and just energy efficiency appliances, right? You know, something from the 60s is going to be really energy.
And a lot of people still want their gas stoves, and they're huge polluters, right?
Huge polluters cause asthma, like, and you still want that.
You know, I do. I'm just going to sit here and say right now, I much prefer cooking on gas. And I get back to, again, I don't like when individual citizens are made to feel guilty for something that they didn't personally cause and didn't know. Didn't have the power to do something about. So when we talk about methane in particular, and people can check out, you know, more references, but methane leaks are a huge issue. If the that kind of clean bill that they were working on in the Obama administration to allow a lot more methane production and kind of put that in every home, if the EPA had been checking those pipelines and not seeing the leaks that were occurring, it might be that we could use gas in a responsible way, you know, and I'm not saying what people need to do either way on that. But now there are so many leaks in so many pipelines throughout the entire U.S. that it's a massive problem, right? The methane problem. But again, that's not any individual citizen who chose that or voted for that or caused that.
Right.
We have to hold them accountable.
Yeah, I agree.
I completely agree on that. Where corporations are the main polluters, our own habits also push it, though, as well.
Lots of habits.
True.
Although methane comes a lot from gas leaks, it also comes from our meat consumption.
That's right.
Our usage of landfills where they just stack it on. I know our very own Scott Park was built on a landfill, and there's signs up saying methane leaking. So there are certain habits that we have that we should really, I mean, feel guilty for, but like not to an extreme where you're always thinking about it. But if you don't do anything to change, small is all right. So you have to be the movement in the world, you know?
Yeah, Antonio, speak it.
Yeah, speak it. That's the thing. And I think, you know, with that understanding, what can a young person start by doing? I mean, in terms of attire, eating habits, travel, you know, personal items. What can you say? What can you tell them?
There, as a young person, there's certain things that are really difficult to be carbon neutral on. For example, like I said, I live in the dorms. I have gas heating, even though I don't want it, right? So I leave the window open. That is just a waste of resources, and I'm stuck in it. But there's also things that I do to combat that. I thrift a lot of my clothes. There's a lot of good things.
You were talking to me about that last week, that all your clothes are thrifted.
A vast majority.
So, thrifting, what else can you say about your own?
Another thing, it's kind of difficult in the United States because we don't have the structure for it. But if you live elsewhere, public transportation. I would love if I could just hop on a train to get home, but the train is in Lordsburg. I got to drive an hour to go there.
And then
once I get on the train, I mean,
where does your car go?
Yeah, where does it go?
So then you have to change trains twice. I've taken that train a few times to California.
And flying leaves a huge carbon footprint, for example. And people still fly a lot. They drive a lot.
We want to hear from the youth themselves. What are they already doing? That's some of what the summit is about, is to get a conversation going. And this is the first time we're doing this at Western. There's a real focus and movement at Western to become carbon neutral itself as a university, and it's made quite a few strides. It's a major tenet of Dr. Shepherd's strategic plan for the coming years. We've had a lot of trees planted. That's going to continue. As he said, there's a massive grant they won. I know you might get Mr. Kessler on to talk about what that grant is all about. And we have solar panels. We have EV stations that cars can park in.
Are you seeing more EVs out there?
I don't know if I'm seeing them, but I know
Teslas.
That. Yeah, I know that our campus has the spots for them if they need them. But so there is a big movement on the campus to do that. And we want to hear from youth about what they are doing, what is working, because, with this idea of small is all, it's not always about one person, I think, or one young person trying to get their family to recycle or something. That could work.
Yeah.
But it might be that they work on a tree project. It might be that they go into the forestry profession, and then the way they help land manage in the state of New Mexico is how they make a difference. You know, so there's so many ways your part. It might not be every single day what you wear, what you eat, what you drive, but we want youth to know that they have a big role in this.
And youth, we need trees downtown on Bullard. Please come down and plant us some trees here.
Yep, I can see one right there.
Yeah, there's a tree there,
right there.
But we need a lot more shade here.
Good point. They could get involved with Main Street Project and do something like that. We want to hear what they're thinking, too. Would you talk a little, too, about the social media side of things and what your group is doing on that?
Of course, what's
going on there?
So a big thing in this town, whenever I'm looking for something, I go look for flyers. I'll come down here. I'll see, like, a flyer for this event, flyer for this event, and I decide what I want to do. But most people don't do that. We had a group of people go to Aldo Leopold High School and just talk to the students. What do you go to for social media or for
information?
No one really said flyers. No one really said the
newspapers,
computer.
Newspaper.
They said their phone. They said social media. So for the summit on May 1st, 10 a.m. to 12.
Let's hear more about that again. Okay, listeners, as we're wrapping up, tell us more about that date.
Yeah, and what you do. How many minutes do we have? Just checking.
We're ready to wrap it up here very shortly, next 3 minutes.
Quick, tell about the Instagram, maybe where people can find information.
Okay. I forget the name of the Instagram. It was the Instagram name to find more information is WNMU small is all. Oh, I forget the name.
It's all right. Look on your phone. It's fine.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So this group, I can talk a little while he's looking that up. Yeah. They created social media posts each week to get hopefully this word out to youth. They made a video that they recorded and we'll see how far it spreads. And that way we're hoping a different generation will hear about the WNMU _ youth and media is the Instagram account if you want to learn more that way. And see, Antonio, you guys did your recorded kind of short video. So short form information is what young people want. 30 seconds to a minute. That's all we got to catch them.
That's really good to know. And again, this is on May. The summit's on May 1st.
Thank you, yes.
At the Miller Library starting at 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And what else can you say? From 10 a.m. until
noon,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, good. Anything else you can say as we wrap up today's show? What would you like our listeners to really understand as we...
I would say be careful with all the wording out there. Words are specifically used to get you to feel something.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to be careful what you know. Climate change, as a word, used to be global warming, but global warming was too extreme. So people were paid to change it.
Mm-hmm.
So just be careful.
We're encouraged to talk to politicians to stop using that word so that people would feel differently about it. Yeah. So Frank Luntz is another one to check out. He's a wordsmith and a pundit for the Republican Party. And so lots of words have been changed over the years to help the public digest something they want them to digest or vote a certain way. So
Jennifer and Antonio, that's such an important thing you're addressing, you know, how we have to really, really pay attention to all this wordsmithing and how things are reframed to just divert from what's being hidden from us in terms of climate change and the crisis we're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate you both being here today, and I really wish you the best, you know, success and luck with that day coming up May 1st.
All right. Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
I'm glad you could be here. You've been listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Kuru 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Community Spotlight airs every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. and is also available online at gmcr.org. I'm Candace Burke. Thanks for listening.